So you're familiar with the Chiron, the center plate? So if you look at the Chiron, if you look at the center plate, you'll notice that there is, the Chiron is a circle. The center plate is a circle, and the very simple reason why it's a circle is because matzah is circular. Now, is this intentional? Is matzah meant to be circular? Now, technically, if you roll out dough with your hands, it will be circular. That's not when you roll dough. You cannot make a square. You can shape it into a square, but if you actually roll it naturally, it'll turn into a circle. So most people think that the reason why a matzah is a circle is this happenstance. It happens to be a circle, right? That would make sense. You know, when they made matzah, they made machine matzah, and they made it square, right? Machine matzah square. Shmur matzah, hand-baked matzah, circle. And when they did when machine matzah came out, its very earlier forms, about 100 years ago, there was a huge debate whether it's okay to have machine matzah, because it was new technology. And is there any type of mystical reason why this should not be, again, not halachically. Maybe halachically there were certain opinions that it wasn't good, certain opinions that it was actually even better. It could be much more accurate, but some people said that there's no intention. It was a huge debate. But the more deeper question was, if you're creating square matzahs, is that appropriate to create square matzah? And the deeper understanding is, no, it has to be circular. It has to be a circle. So the fact that the Chiron, that the center plate is also a circle, however you make the Chiron. You know what Chiron is? Chiron is called the center plate, it's Chiron. However you make this Chiron, it's generally circular, shaped as a matzah. On top of that, so you place the matzah, and then there's also items that you use in the seder, right? And that's placed, there are very different customs how this is done. But there are different items. Let's say you have mara, is an item. You have an egg. You have a bone. You have, what else do you have? Charesis. You have karpas. You have a piece of onion or something, a potato. These are the things that you have on the kara. Now, how exactly is it shaped? What do you do? So there was a lot of debate about this, how this is done, and different customs over the years develop how exactly you shape the Chiron. So on the Chiron, which you have the items of the Seder, how do you shape this? Now there was the older Ashkenazic custom, which is done one way, and then the Ari developed another way of doing it, and that's the way most people do it today. And the way the Ari developed the Chiron is that they're shaped like two triangles. So you'll have an upper triangle, you have one to the right, one to the left, one in the middle, and one to the right, one to the left, and one to the middle. You have two triangles on top of the Chiron. So the Chiron is a circle, and on top of the circle, you're actually creating lines, right? You're creating something with angles. So you have something that has no angles, and then you're creating something that has two angles, and you have point 1, 2, 3, then 1, 2, and 3. You have 6 items in total, and 3 and 2 separate triangles. Are you familiar with this card? Are you familiar with how this looks? You're not familiar. Do you have a hello?
What?
Do you have any about this?
Yeah.
Would you put a separate plate on top of the circle?
So wait a second. So this is, we'll see how this works. That's where you keep the agado.
No,
it
was here last time.
No, any agada. You know agada?
I do.
I have virtual one.
Oh, you have virtual one?
Yeah.
Right here.
Okay. Give them out, because that does have the same effect. Let me see.
I'll just make it a bit lighter here.
If you look at this,
Google it.
Okay. This is on page 18. No one has this.
This one, right?
Yeah.
Where it looks like a triangle?
Yeah.
So
two triangles.
Yeah.
Not like this.
Okay, it's on page 18.
Still doing custom things.
Okay. I'll get two more.
Thank you.
All right. So this is the way it's done. The Chiron is actually this plate. So on the plate, you have the upper triangle, and you have Azroi Beitza and Amara, and then the lower triangle is Haresis, Karpas, and Chazaris. Okay, that's the way it's shaped. So if you just use your little bit of imagination, or if you see imagery, you'll see that it's a circle, right? Mm-hmm. And at the top of the circle, there's two. Now, where do you put the matzah? Where do the matzah go? So, again, there's various different customs. We're gonna focus the way that Ari talks about it, the way that Arizal does, and this is the way most of the world actually today practices. Yeah, or else Sephardic have a little different custom. Traditional Ashkenazic do it a little differently. The Grah does it a little differently, but this is the general custom. So what you do is, some people have the matzah here, and then they'll have the karet plate, and on the karet plate you'll have all these six items. And according to the Ari, the way you do it is you have three matzah. On top of the matzah, you put the plate, the kaira. So if you have like a fancier version of this, it'll actually have, you have slots. You put your matzah in three slots. And on top of that is this circle, which is the kaira. And on top of that, you put these six items. So the matzah is lying underneath. And on top of that is these six items. That's the way it's according to the prevalent custom. Now in total, just count the numbers, you'll have six items plus three matzah plus the kaira itself, which is what's holding it, is 10. So these are going to correspond to the 10 sefirot, to the 10 spiritual emanations. And the 10 sefirot are connected to these 9/10 items. So one is the container, which is holding everything, which is the kaira. And then on that, underneath that is going to be three matzah, and on top of that is going to be these six items. And the structure, this is basically a miniature structure of the creation of the universe. That the creation of the universe, the movement from Ein Sof, from infinite light, to finite existence, to matter, to finite matter, space and time, is that there is the infinite light. The infinite light contracts itself and sort of goes in the perimeter perimeter of the space. So let's say this is all conceptually, it's not actually that literal, but let's say imagine this. So imagine you have a light that's filling a certain space. Okay, now the light retracts. That's a tzimtzum. Light's retracting. Then there's the light that, after the contraction, the light re-emerges into this space. But the emergence in the light in the space is that when the light fills the space, it immediately goes into the parameter of the space. So it becomes a circle. Now this is conceptual, it's not literal. Could you conceive that? Could you conceptualize that? Something is entering into a space. Example of that. Let's say you fill up a room with smoke. I don't know if it actually works this way, but let's say you fill up a room with smoke and you pump smoke into the center of the room, the smoke will automatically go to the surrounding and it'll leave an empty space within the middle. Okay, that's similar to this idea. Where the light enters, there's an entering of this light, but the light first comes circular.
This is the eagle?
This is the eagle. This is called the great circle. After the circle, there emerges something called yasher, which is the direct line. It's also called a kav, which is a line. Let's try to bring it down 1,000 levels. It's like this. From the infinite light to create finitude, or from the movement of something that's infinite and one to the world of duality and separation, or the apparent separation and duality, in order for that to be created, the infinite light has to retract itself. Because if the infinite light is just an expansive state, then it overwhelms everything. So even if there's an emergence of finitude within the infinity, if there's just infinity, it overwhelms the vessels of finitude. I'll give you an example of this. Let's say you enter into a conversation where two people are talking about astrophysics, and you're not an astrophysicist. you have no idea what they're talking about, right? So you enter into their space, but if they're talking and they're very animated in their conversation and you're just present there and you have nothing really to add, you become completely overwhelmed in the conversation that you almost don't exist there. This is similar to with infinity. The divine self, Hashem, whatever you want to call this, the source, is not infinite, is not finitude. Because both infinity and finitude are both expressions of something that's larger. The creator himself, itself, is both infinite in expression and finite in expression. It includes both. Or to say differently, it has both light and vessel. But when there is an expression of the light of infinity, it overwhelms the vessel, that the vessel doesn't recognize itself in the experience. So it's like the person that's having a conversation with another two people, and they start talking about something that's way over your head, and you're just present, but you're not really there. This is the overwhelming expression of infinity, that finitude is there, it's just not revealed. Are you following this analogy?
This would be like Tayo?
No, this would be way before this. This is way before. This is the way.
This is ego.
No, this is before this. This is the way everything exists within.
Or in Caleb.
The Aura and the Kli exists within the Creator.
I also heard that eagle was chaos. Also.
Wait one second. Before we get there, in order for the revealing of the Caleb of the vessels, in order for there to be a revealing of the finite, infinity had to contract within itself to allow for finite existence or finite vessels to appear. Which means the finite vessels are also included within God. It wasn't a creation. It was always there. Hashem is not infinite. Hashem is not finite. Hashem is in it. Before the Tzimtzum, the infinite light overwhelms the finite light that doesn't allow for finitude to be expressed, to exist. So what the Tzimtzum does, the contraction does, it allows for the finite existence to emerge. You follow? It doesn't create the finite. It allows for finitude to show. It's like, for example, these two people are having a conversation. You're present there, and you feel like, you know, completely like an imbecile because you have nothing to add to the conversation. And then they start talking about sports, and all of a sudden, whoa, okay, I can talk about that. And then you feel like you're back into the conversation. Because the moment they reduce their intelligence to talk about something that's silly or nonsense, and you feel like this is what you know, you feel I can add to the conversation. When infinity stops expressing itself, it allows for finite existence to emerge. You follow? Not that it's the creation. The Tzimtzum didn't create finitude. The Tzimtzum allows for finitude to become revealed.
It just made room for it.
Exactly. It made room for finite existence to emerge. So God is one, infinite, finite, everything. In the first revealing, before the Tzimtzum, is a revealing of the infinite light, the Ein Sof. Because the revealing of infinite light, it didn't allow for the possibility of finitude to express itself. The contraction allowed for finite light to come into existence. Okay? It didn't create it, it allowed it to come into existence. Once this finite light came into existence, similar to the idea of the smoke in an empty space, which means it sucked, the infinite light contracted, not literal, but it contracted its light from the room. Imagine there's a huge light that's penetrating this room. The light withdraws within itself. Okay, and you start shutting off the flashlight. And then, if you have a huge, tremendous amount of light in this room now, it will cancel everything out. You wouldn't see that there's tables and chairs and people, right? This light would be completely overwhelming. A real bright, bright, bright light that would cancel everything out. The moment the light starts diminishing, you actually start making out there's other things besides the light. Instead of everything becoming completely submerged in this light, that you don't recognize that there are two people sitting here, when the light starts dimming, you start recognizing that there are other people. You're following the analogy?
Okay. So ego is with that.
So wait a second. Once there's a contraction of this infinite light, so the emergence of the finite emerges. Now you see that there's this person here, this person there, which means the finite existence. In this empty room, the light retracts itself. It gives room for this finite existence. This finite light is like, as if, so to speak, is like the smoke that enters into this empty space. And immediately that finite light becomes an eagle, becomes a circle. In the world of circle, everything exists simultaneously. That's the definition of a circle. A circle means that there's no beginning and no end. So in our perception of time and space and consciousness, is that there was yesterday, there's tomorrow, and there's today. There's me, there's you, there's here, there, another place. Which means we function in a world where we see things linear. And in the world of linear, there's a before and there's an after. In the world of the circle, which means the first revealing of the finite light after the infinite light contracted itself, everything was simultaneously present from the beginning of time to the end of time. Every single person, every single experience, every single thing that would ever be existed simultaneously because it's in the world of the circle. You follow?
Mm-hmm.
That's the world of ego.
Sounds very infinite, by the way.
No, because it's not. No, it's not infinite. It's the fullness. It's sort of what a parallel to that this would be, what scientists would say after the Big Bang, if you assume that this is a correct theory. So the moment after the Big Bang, the first emergence of life, or whatever would emerge right after the Big Bang, that encapsulates all of history of the universe in this one expression. And then what happens throughout the many years is this articulation of this idea. That's the seed of everything. The same thing also in the eagle. The eagle includes everything that will ever happen in this circular reality. So it's not infinite, because infinite doesn't have finite expressions. It's actually finite because it includes all the finite expressions that will emerge in the universe till the end of time. That's the world of eagle.
But they're all happening simultaneously.
They're all happening simultaneously. Correct. They're all happening simultaneously. Once the eagle emerges, once this circular reality, which includes all reality, emerges, then starts the linear reality, which is like the light returns, cause of here, there's a light that penetrates into this room, and now this is going to be a more finite light that gives sequence, that gives cause and effect, that gives past and future. Not everything simultaneously. The place of choice, the place where human beings can participate in our unfolding, that's the place of the cow, that's the place of the line. Is this kind of clear?
The circular was the universe, essentially?
The circle is all the energy of the universe that's possible. From the beginning of time to the end of time.
Like Simpson.
No, post-Simpson.
Post-Simpson.
This is what the Simpson contracts.
Mm-hmm.
The finite exist light shows up. But the finite light shows up in a way that it's all-inclusive without any differentiation, all simultaneous.
But just light or the universe?
Everything. You.
Right.
All your experiences, all your thoughts, all your feelings, everything. The totality of whatever will be is included in the eagle.
So, can I ask a question?
Yeah, sure.
So the symptom is basically like our lowest level of malchut reality, that we can consume the infinite energy of Hashem. Is that correct? And we can connect to higher levels, to different dimensions by different, like, sephirot or certain.
We're gonna talk about this.
Okay.
Because this is just the general. I just want to get to the Kaira and the thing. So once there is the line, the Kav, that's when the sephirot come in.
Mm-hmm.
So when there's the sephirot, we talk about 10 points. That there is a point of chachma, wisdom, and bina, understanding, and das, knowledge. All those realities only start emerging in the world of kaf, in the world of line, in the world of linear, of yashar, of direct. Because then you have it up and down. You can say, let's say, for example, for yourself, had an epiphany. Because then I thought about it, I started thinking about what this idea I should do, and then I started implementing it. So it starts with chachma, which is like an epiphany, an idea. I have an intuition to do something. I think about it with my power of bina, to understand it. Then I implement it through my power of das, which is awareness, conscious awareness. So I bring it down to my heart, how I'm going to feel about it, and then actually how I'm going to make it happen in this world, until it actually happens. So it starts off with an idea, and then it goes through stages. It goes through 10 stages until it's developed fully. Which means that in the world of the line, of the linear, is where there's an up and down, and there's a stalschluss, there's a movement from one to the next. The grand example of this idea of all the sefirot would be a person wishing to create a home. Let's say build a home. So if you want to build a home, or build a space for yourself. So first you have a certain conception of what this idea is. You're not really sure exactly where you're going to buy, or what exactly how it's going to look, but you have a certain notion, a certain intuition, I need to get a house. I need to get an apartment. Okay. I don't talk about if you're actually going to build it, if you're going to build a space. It doesn't have to be a home. It could be a film, it could be a company, it could be whatever you're doing, relationship, but you're going to build something. So first you have to conceive this idea, ha, which is I have an intuition that I need to be doing this. And I could see it somehow in my mind how this is going to look. I don't have to know exactly the details. Then I sit down and I start using my beat. That's chafa. That's like the right hemisphere of the brain, the creative part of the brain. That's where I just have this idea as an idea. Then I say I'm going to use my bina, which is my left part of the brain, is that we're going to start developing this idea. I'm going to start thinking about it. I'm going to break it down into details. That's the left part of the brain. So I'm taking this conception, idea of chachma, and then I take bina. I'm going to break it down into different details and figure out what exactly, what I have to be doing. That's bina. Das is, but it's all just in my mind. It's a conception. It's just something in my thought process. But then I want to take that idea that I have to create this film, this job, this home, whatever I want to create, and I need to start, you know, feeling that this is the right thing for me to do. So I start feeling it. And the feeling process is, so das is what connects conceptual ideas of the mind with actuality, how I'm going to feel about it. So das is like the, you know, a person can have a very high level of intelligence, but they don't have a good IQ. Let's say a child, it's a perfect example. You have a child, they know clearly, and it's clear to them that if they put their hand in, like, you know, in the toaster oven, it's not going to work out well. They're going to burn themselves. But they try it anyways. And then they burn themselves, they do it again. Das means that there's a disconnect between the mind and how you feel, how you act. That's a lack of das. And when a person has das, it's they're drawing what they understand, and they're drawing it down into their own self. So it's becoming personal, it's becoming subjective. I'm understanding it. Then you have to go ahead and actually do it. And the process of doing is chesed. Chesed means I'm expressing it. Chesed is a right calm emotion, which is I'm expressing. I have this idea, I need to go. So I'm going to pick up a hammer, let's say, or pick up a felt, whatever I'm doing. I'm going to pick up a hammer and start building. Chesed is the process of the proactive action here that I have to be doing. And gvura is the restrictive aspect. So let's say if I'm knocking in a hammer and a nail, so gvura means that I'm holding down the nail, and chesed would be that I'm banging it in. Right? So there's a restriction and a giving. The chesed is the giving, and the gvura is the restriction. And every single creative act, and everything that you're doing in this world, you have to know where you have to emote, where you have to express, where you have to give, and where you have to hold back. Right? That's the process of anything. Anything that you're doing in this world, you can't just say, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to do it. Okay, that's excellent, but you have to know, and where you're restricting. What's the restricting process in this development of this creative idea? So you have the chesed and the gevurah. And then you have to create some type of balance between these two, which is tiferes. So the chesed, gevurah, tiferes is the movement out, the movement in, the extrovert, the introvert, or the moving out and moving in, and then some type of balance between these two. It's not exactly what I said about the hammer and nail, because it's more about, it's still within yourself. It's not an external action. It's I need to, if I want to create something, I have a great idea, I have this in chachma, I figured it out in bina, I want to do it, then I have to emotionally feel that I want to go do it. So a lot of people have great ideas, but they never do it. So I need to, in my self, within myself, I need to become active. I need to choose to be in an active mode. So being in chesed is being in this active mode. Being in gvura is being in this active mode, also with a certain sense that I need to know when to constrict. And then netzach and hoid are the external emotions of chesed and gvura. So chesed and gvura is the emotions the way it exists within the person. I'm in an active state of mode. Like, you know, you meet someone that's very busy and say, I'm busy now, even though they're not really doing anything now. But in their mind and in their heart, in their space, they're actually in an active mode. And netzach is actually doing the physical thing externally. So it's bodily thing, something that's external to the body. You're actually doing it. And hoyd is the restriction of that thing that you're doing. So netzach and hoyd would be a better image with the hammer and nail. Like, I need to go... to build this, I need to gather, you know, these materials. I need to get the right people. I need to be all these people on board. And I also need to know who is not good at these jobs. Like, this person is good for this, we're not good for that. So this is on an emotional level. And I'm also in this active, in an internal state. I'm very in an active mode. And then I go ahead and actually do it, which is my netzach and hoid, my right column, the left column, which is actually physically doing it and physically restricting. Yesod is my connection to the project. And malchut, or malchus, is the recipient of all the energy that I'm putting out. That's the project itself. That's the vessel that's holding all my energy. Or it's like the home that I'm building, or the film that I'm writing, or the book that I'm writing, whatever it is, whatever I'm creating. You're following this process? Okay, this is the way it works with the Sefirot. So the Sefirot is very linear. You go from Chachma to Bina to Gvura. That's general. That's the way it works. Okay. So you have the circle of reality, and then you have the linear reality. And if you look again, going back to the Kaira, what you're going to do is you're going to create a circle through the matzah. The matzah is going to be a circle, and the Kaira itself, the container is going to be a circle. It's circular. And it's circular because it represents the world of the eagle. It represents that raw space, the original space post-Simpson. It also represents Malchut, which is the recipient, which is the container that's holding everything. And the container is circular. The feminine is a quality of circular. That's holding the space. Is this clear? This is the circular image. So the 9 items of the Seder that we're going to create is going to be the 3 matzah, which is going to correspond to Chachma, Bina, and Das, the 3 levels of intelligence. The top matzah is Chachma. The middle matzah is going to be Bina. And the third matzah, the lower matzah, is going to be Das. So the way the way we can understand this is that the top matzah remains whole until you eat it. That wholeness represents Chachma, wisdom, intuition, right brain. Because the way you think about things in the right brain is that they all exist in your mind simultaneously. When a person has a creative idea or an intuition of something, they're not thinking in sequence. They're not thinking X, Y, and Z. When a person has an image, okay, I need to do this, or I need to create that. It's a flash of insight, and it comes to the person as a whole. It doesn't come to the person in details. The middle matzah corresponds to Bina, because the middle matzah is the matzah that actually break in half. Right? That's the matzah that you're going to, the beginning of the Seder, you're going to break, because the breaking of the matzah itself represents the idea of dissecting things, which is Bina. Bina is the left part of the brain, which is Lavendam. You're thinking about one thing through the second thing, which is the way the left brain works is through details. Right? So it's broken. That's the idea of Bina. And the bottom matzah is Das, represents Das. Because Das, we said before, remember Das is the awareness, but Das is what connects the mind and the heart. So like a child doesn't have Das, because they can understand that they have to be doing this, but not necessarily they're going to act this way. So das is a connecting act. What do we do with the final matzah, the lower matzah? The lower matzah is what we create the sandwich with the matzah and the mar, or the pesach matzah mar, which is a sandwich of opposites. You're taking redemption, which is the idea of the offering of pesach, the carbon pesach, the meat, or matzah, and you're putting it together with the mar, and you're eating it as a sandwich. So you're creating as a unity between the upper and lower worlds, or between the opposite worlds. That's the idea of das. If you think about this in terms of the name of Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, if you don't understand what I'm saying, just in the Yud and the Hei Vav Kei, so the Yud is the upper matzah is the Yud, Chachma, that corresponds to Chachma, to wisdom. The middle matzah is when you break the matzah, so you break a smaller piece off the bigger piece, that's actually a hay, right? That's the way it's going to be shaped. It's going to be shaped like this. With one leg, it's going to be shaped as a hay. I mean, you have to be a little crazy to see it, but that's the way it's going to be shaped. If you have a circle, you pull off the left side of it, you're going to have something that looks like a dalet, and then a line, which would be the hay. So that represents the hay. But the left leg of the smaller matzah, which is alfi kodem, is also a vav, right? It's a line. So you have the hay and the vav in the middle matzah. The final matzah, which again you're going to break and have a sandwich, is going to be the final hay as well. So this is the way the matzahs are ordered. So you have the upper matzahs chachma, bina, and das. So you start from the vav and you go to the low, chachma, bina, das. Now what you do on Pesach is you actually take the matzah. And in the spherot, first comes the chachma bina das, the mind, and then comes the emotions, chesed, words, and feres, and the emotions. So what you should really be doing is you should have the matzah on top and underneath the karet. Right? If you follow the structure, you have chachma bina das, top matzah, middle matzah, lower matzah. Then you have the six items, which are going to be the spherot. Then you should have chesed, words, and feres, which means the lower items. But you don't do that. What you do is actually reverse. You put chachma bina das, and you put it on the bottom, and then on top of that you layer the emotions. Okay? Now one of the reasons that you do this, as opposed to doing the other way, even though we have to be very creative how we do it the other way, I guess you could do it with sticks or something, is because Pesach night, which we'll see soon, is about structure, but getting to a place that's beyond the structure. It's about the shalosh, it's about the structure of the order of the universe, but it's about really getting to a place that's beyond the order. So you'll do chachma bina das, and then on top of the kaira, this is what you'll have. It'll be a page, it'll be very clear. So you have two triangles. The top triangle is zeroya, then a veitza, and then a mara. So the zeroya is the zeroya nebeya, which the zeroya is like a bone, technically like the right leg of an animal, but we don't do that. So just some type of bone of an animal. Most people take the neck of a chicken or something like that. So the Zeroya and the Beah corresponds to the two offerings that were offered on Pesach in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, in the times of the Temple, which was the carbon Pesach, the offering of Pesach, and the Chagiga. It was like a celebratory offering that was also offered. So the Gemara says you have to bring two tafshilim, you have to bring two items. Now, the Zeroya, you don't eat. The Zeroya is just there, it's symbolic. You just keep it there on the Seder plate. It's just a reminder of the Karban Pesach, the offering of Pesach. The Zeroya corresponds to the Sphira of Chesed. The Zeroya represents Zeroya Netuya, the outstretched arm. When it says that Hashem took us out of Egypt, he did it with an outstretched arm, which means that it was a revealing of Chesed, a revealing of kindness. What does kindness mean? Kindness means that in order for us to receive, if I am receiving through gvura, that means I deserve. If I'm receiving a kindness from another person, it means I don't deserve. So Zroya Netuya means that the people in Egypt, Klal Yisrael, were in a state of the 49 levels of Tumah. They were in a very deep, negative place. And the story of Pesach is Passover, literally, Passover. What is it, Passover? Passover means that we reach levels beyond what we worked on and expected. So it wasn't that we were worthy of receiving this type of redemption. It wasn't that we had such expansive consciousness that we left the state of slavery and inner slavery. No, we were stuck in the same place like the Egyptians were, both marred in a very deep level of idol worship and stuckness and a real negative trauma. And Hashem came and thrust us out from that place. And that's what we celebrate on the Night of Pesach. The Night of Pesach is that even though you're stuck and you're in a place of constriction and limitation and everything that Egypt represents, and Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim, the Night of Pesach is a gift. It's a divine gift that comes through chesed, through a chesed. Hashem says, I'm going to take you out. I'm going to help you one night. I'm going to give you a sense of clarity. I'm going to open you up to something different. And then you have to work on yourself throughout the year, but I'm going to give you another way of being if you just open yourself up to it. That's chesed. That's a divine kindness. That's what we experience on the Night of Pesach. The Night of Pesach is a chesed, that Hashem gives us clarity and openness and expansiveness, not in comparison to the work that we put in, not in comparison to the state we're in. It's pure chesed. And that's why it's the carbon based chesed represents in the offering of Pesach. So we symbolically put this Zeraya on the right top corner, which is symbolic of the sphere of chesed. That's the right corner. Upper right corner. The upper left corner.
Wait, sorry, that's the bone?
That's the right? Yeah, the Zeraya is called the that bone.
So why, what?
It's symbolic of the offering of the Pesach, of the Korban Pesach. We don't do the Korban Pesach today. We don't do the actual offering. So we have like a bone that represents that idea to remind us of the Korban Pesach. But the Korban Pesach means, like the story of the going out of Egypt, that they were told to bring this offering. And through the offering, they were saved. Right? Hashem skipped over the doorpost because they brought the offering. So that's the idea. The idea is that it's going to be given, kindness is going to be given to you tonight, a divine kindness, a higher level of consciousness, a higher level of clarity, will be given to you as a gift. That's the right corner, that's the chesed. The left corner is we put a beitza, a bea, which is an egg, and that is symbolic of gevura, of restriction, of judgment. And for many multiple reasons, one of the simple, more simple reasons is because the egg is oval, and the egg was a dish that even today is served for people that are mourning. That after a person after a funeral, generally people are served eggs. This goes back already to the time, biblical times, when it speaks about serving eggs, but with Yitzchak and Yaakov and Esau. But the idea of an egg represents, because it represents. It's because this oval represents the cycle of life, and therefore it's a food of mourners. And it's also a reminder of the destruction, which is the same. It's then the first night of Tisha B'Av. The night of Tisha B'Av is the same night of the first day of Pesach. And it's also the idea of, also literally an egg, is that an egg is the longer you cook it, the harder it becomes. Some food is the opposite, it becomes softer, but the egg becomes harder, which means that the more you boil it, the more harder it becomes. So it's the idea of gevura. But also, which is also important, why we use the egg, is because the egg also represents possibility of new life. Even though the egg that we eat doesn't have new life, but it has potential new life, theoretically, if it was done in a regular way, not self, fabricated eggs, but eggs that are natural, is that they represent the possibility of an effort, the possibility of giving birth to another, something else. So it's like a hard egg, and if you break it open, there could be a new life. And that's gevura. So gevura is like the things that feel restrictive in our life, or the restriction that we have in our life. And the recognition that even though there's gevura in our life, seems to be concealment, sometimes if you crack it open, you can see the life, and there's this possibility. So that's the chesed on the right side, and the left side you put the gevura, which is the bea. The middle column is Mar, which is this is Chesed Gevura Tiferes. This is the upper three spheres. Remember, these are experiences as they're experienced within ourselves. So the emotion, the outward emotion, the restrictive emotion, the expansive emotion, the inward emotion, and Tiferes is compassion. And compassion, which is also is the Mar. The Mar is the compassion. Now the reason why it's compassion is because compassion is a blend between kindness and restriction. Because in the world of chesed, of pure kindness, it's not about the recipient of your kindness. It's the need to be kind. There are certain people in the world, there should be more such people, that have such a tremendous need to be kind that it's not relevant whether the recipient desires to receive your kindness, but I have a need to show my love to you, to express my love to you, to express my appreciation for you. This is a need. This is a human need to express kindness. Sometimes it comes in a detrimental way because it's not about the receiver. It's not about, you're not really conscious or aware about the receiver. You know, you walk into someone's apartment, let's say, for example, and you really want to show that you're really kind, you want to spend time with them, and the person's tired. Right? So, okay, that's a very nice thing that you want to show these gestures of the grand gestures of kindness, but the real kindness is now is to leave the apartment, is to leave the house. So this is a chesed, the consciousness of chesed, or the idea of chesed, is chasdal. I just need to express myself to that other person. And it's not about the other person. Restriction is all about the other person. Because when a person restricts, what do they say? They say, I would like to give you, but I recognize that if I give you, let's say if I'm a parent, if I give you money, you're going to it's going to get on spending and you'll be spoiled. So I'm going to hold it back. So I'm very much aware and cognizant of the recipient. So gvur is about, chesed is about me, gvur is about you. That's what the middah of gvur, that's the attribute of gvur, is always about a certain awareness of the receiver. And unfortunately, the harsh act of gvur is, therefore I'm not going to give you anything. I would love to give you because I feel I need to give. But I know that you're going to receive it, you're going to receive it in the wrong way. I'm not going to give you anything. And what's compassion? And this is the true way of giving. Compassion giving means I recognize that I need to give, but I have an awareness of who you are and what you could receive. And we're going to do something of a harmony between these two things. What I can give and what you can receive. So compassion, Tiferes, is a blend between Chesed and Gevurah. Okay? That's why it's the middle sphera. And the item that we place for the sphere of compassion is Mara. It's actually the Mara. Now, this is interesting because in a lot of the earlier versions of the Kaira, not the Ari, there's only one Mara on the Kaira. The Ari actually divides the Mara into two. And he says there's going to be the Mara that we eat as Mara, as the mitzvah to eat Mara. The Rabbanu to eat Mara, and also the Chazeres, which is going to be in the sandwich or the Hillel sandwich. So they're two separate things. And the simple reason why Mara is compassion is because sometimes in order for us to be compassionate to other people, we have to be aware of our own situation. And the more we become aware of our own struggles or our own hardships that we're dealing with, more compassion we can be to other people. So Murr is a way to open ourselves up to feel the bitterness. We spoke about this last time, not depression, not Atzlis, but Mirirus. Murr is Mirirus. To feel the difficulty of the situation that you're in and the longing to be in a better situation. And that opens ourselves up to be open to other people's pain as well. And the Zohar says that what we're saying is that I'm feeling this Mirirus, this bitterness, and I have compassion, we're saying, Hashem, you should have compassion on us. So the middle of the right, between on the upper spirit, is Chesed Gevurah, that's the Tiferes, that's Mara. Okay. That's the top. So these three also represent the mitzvahs that are connected to the Torah mitzvahs, because it's the Korban Pesach, it's the Chagiga, and it's the Mara. The Charoses, Karpas, and Chazeres. So, the charesis, you know what charesis is? Charesis is basically apples, pears, nuts. It's Evan. Apple, pear, nice, baron, nice. That's the general thing. You put a little wine. Charesis. Familiar with charesis? Okay. So, And what is karpas? A karpas is a vegetable. Some type of vegetable. Some people take a potato or celery or onion. Those are the two things. Now, the charis is sweet, the karpas is bitter. Also, a very clear distinction between these two is one is fruits, one is a vegetable. Right? Charis is created from fruit, and karpas is created from a vegetable. The difference is between netzach and hayot. So we said before, there's Chesed Gevurah Tiferes, which is the emotions, the way they exist within you. And then there's the emotions as they are expressed outside of you. So, for example, every single thing in this world we can do it from a place of Netzach, which is power, confidence, or we can do it from a place of Hoyt, which is humility and humbleness. So we're already acting in this world, and we're doing things in this world. So I have a certain emotion within me, and then I'm going to emote it, I'm going to express it in actuality. I can do this to reach my goal, to achieve certain things that I have to achieve in this world. I can do it through two postures. I can do it through a Netzach, which is in power and powerful, or I can do it from Hoyt, which is humility. Those are the inner experience of these two emotions. And they correspond to the difference between a fruit and a vegetable. A very simple language is that a fruit represents something that's sprouting outwards and is beautiful and has a pleasant aroma. It represents confidence. It represents Netzach, perseverance. And that's why it also charesis is connected to tachas ha-tapuach ha-sticha, that represents the apple fruit, where it says that even though there were charesis also connected to the cement that that we build the buildings in Egypt. The Spitz of Ram says the buildings are built in Egypt. So it represents something that's strong and whole and holds up things. It also represents perseverance. That's not his perseverance, where Klal Yisrael was in a state where there was tremendous decrees against them, and they still were intimate and had children, and they had that relationships, and they were able to have children. That's Netzach. That's the fruit. And opposite of that is the Karpas, which is the idea of Hoyd. And then Chazaris is the other form of Mar, the version of Mar. Also Mar, the same things we do. We take lettuce and horseradish generally. And what we do is we make the Hillel sandwich. So the Hillel sandwich, like we said before, is a bridging of opposites. You're taking redemption and hardship. You're taking past, the future. You're taking all the things that are opposite. You're putting together in a sandwich, which is the idea of Yisoid. Yisoid means, Yisoid, the attribute of Yisoid is my connection to you. So there's all these spheres. I have Chachmas in myself, in my mind. Bina is my mind. Ches is how I'm feeling. Vur is how I'm feeling. Tiferes is how I'm feeling. Netzach is my outward expression already of confidence or humility. And then there's me interacting with something else. The else is Malchus. That's the recipient of my energy. That's the recipient of who I am. The meaning point between myself and other is Yisoid. That's Yisoid. I'm touching this couch. So the tip of my finger is the Yisoid that's touching this couch. The couch is Malchus. Because when I'm touching this couch, all of me is touching because I want to touch it. So my thoughts are there, and my feelings are there, and now I am expressing myself now touching this couch. If I'm speaking to you, that's my whole self, and my mouth now becomes the Yisoid that I'm encountering you. So Yisoid is the point, and that's why it represents the male organ in connection to the female. Where the Mashpia, the giver, and the Makabel are joined as one. Wherever there's the mashpia, wherever there's the giver, which is the person that's speaking, it's my entire self expressed through my yisoid in connection to your malchus. When you start speaking to me, I become the malchus, and you become all the spheres that are speaking to me. And the meaning point is the yisoid. The yisoid is the connection. That's why it's the alignment of self, the fullness of self expressed through that.
So Netzach and Hod would be the way you speak.
Correct.
And yisoid would be the actual
speaking. Correct. That's exactly correct. Correct. So the actual expression, the actual speaking, the actual feeling, the actual drawing, the actual creating, that's the midas ha-yisoid. The yisoid is the point between the giver and the receiver. Now what you're doing again in the entire kaira, if we want to go bring this home, is you're basically saying, you're starting off with a kaira, which is a circle. Right? And you're saying in the circular light, after the post-symptom, there was the way the world created and is being created simultaneously at every single moment. Is that the world is created first as this infinite light contracts itself, and then the finite light comes and reveals itself. The finite light first shows up as a circular reality, which is the world of Yaish, of the eagle, the circle, which is the Kaira. And then from the Kaira, there's a chaz over here, there's a new light that entered, that penetrated, which is a linear light, which is a kaf, and that created the 10 spheres. So you're taking a circle, which is a Kaira, and you're making these two triangles, which are literally, you're drawing out the spheres. First you do Chesed Gvura Tiferes, which is the matzah. Then you're drawing out the spheres, the six lines, held on the Kaira itself, which is Malchut. is so you're replicating the Seder Shalshos. Actually, you're replicating the entire process of creation. Why are you doing this? You're doing this to create it and then allow it to self-destruct. It's almost counterintuitive. Because you're creating it to get to the point where it becomes uncreated. So in the beginning of the Seder, you're actually created. That's what you do. You sit down and you very consciously and very mindfully and very deliberately, with a lot of attention, you create this reality. But as the Seder continues going, one piece gets off, another piece gets off, the matzah gets eaten, and at the end of the Seder, how does the Seder plate look like?
Just turned over.
You mentioned that in the class.
Exactly. Because that was the intention. To get this. So the intention is to get to a place of freedom. So we have to make, what we're saying is, we're going to make a vessel for ourselves. We're going to recreate the Seder Shalshos, this order of the structure of the universe, so we have the proper vessels to assimilate and to integrate transcendence. Because Pesach is really about beyond order. Because if we want to be the place of freedom, which we spoke about the last few times, if you want to be a place of freedom, you can't be in the world of structure, because structure doesn't give you freedom. In the world of linear reality, there is no possibility to change ever, because you're always the effect of the past. And if in the world of linear reality, your imagination is just based on your past, and therefore your future is already predicated on who you are now. So there is no possibility to ever break free, to ever start new, to ever have really schachas, ever renewal. So in order to do this, we have to get to a place that's beyond order, which is Pesach. Pesach means it's Passover, it's transcendence. So we're saying, but if we do that, and we just open ourselves up and we say, okay, here, Pesach, let it happen, then the experience will be like a high, but we won't have the proper vessels and the proper way to integrate these experiences. So what we're doing with the Kairos, we're doing this whole Seder, is we're saying, I am making the vessels that I'm going to be able to receive the experience that I'm going to receive on Pesach night in a way that's going to have lasting effect. If your Pesach, if it's a very pleasant Seder and you really feel free and you really feel open and expansive and clear and a lot of Amunah and Betachah and all these things that you're having on Pesach night, but the next morning you wake up and you're depressed and you have a hangover and everything is like, okay, what just happened? Then you didn't really, maybe you did, you experienced it then, but that means you didn't make the Kairos correctly. You didn't have the vessels correctly. And maybe you don't have. Maybe it's inevitable because the high is much higher than what you can create. But at least you can take something out of it. So what we're doing is we're creating vessels for us to be able to receive correct transformation. So it's important that what we do in the Seder, and we do all these items and we eat all these foods, we have intention what these actually represent. So we'll say that, okay, I'm eating matzah, so now I'm eating chachmah. This is what it represents. I'm integrating, I'm drawing down the moichin of chachma, the intelligence of chachma, which is clarity, openness, expansive. Now I'm eating bina, which is it's giving me clarity and a way of understanding through my left part of the brain, the way I can dissect things. And now I'm eating das. And das is the ability to integrate information in a way that it's real and not just conceive things in a very conceptual way, but actually integrate them. So when you're eating the sandwich, the hillel sandwich, you're thinking about das. And then when you're focusing on the Zoya, just looking, you don't eat the Zoya. You're looking at the Zoya, you're thinking about Chesed. You're looking at the Be'ah. When you're eating the egg, you're saying, I'm cracking open the egg. I'm opening it up. Even though it has a hard shell, there's softness, there's life. Which means I can break open the Gevurah of my life and to receive proper things. When I'm eating the Mar, I'm feeling the pain. I'm feeling the pain, the physical pain. It's a visceral. I'm feeling the pain. I'm becoming more compassionate for myself, for others. So Hashem should have compassion on me. The world should be revealed. And Hashem should be compassionate. We should draw a lot of rachem into this world. And then when you're dipping in the charoses, you're thinking about Netzach, and you're looking at the karpas, you're thinking about hoyd, and you're humble, you're putting the karpas in salt water, and it's causing tears. And then reading the chazeres, you're thinking about yisoid. And then when you're actively engaged in the Seder process, in a way that's very mindful and very conscious, hopefully, God willing, your experience of the Seder will be much more meaningful in general, and hopefully it'll have more lasting effects. The future as well.